So call me back.
Okay, I love you. Bye.
This is going to be a weird way to start the episode, but it's on my mind, and this is what I need to talk about first today. It's just in my bones that I need to talk about it. I brought this up with my friends last weekend. We were talking about porn, and I was like, you know, usually I'm able to find something pretty quickly, but other times I have a very specific vision of the porn I want to be watching. And sometimes I have a concept inside my head and I just hope that somebody's already thought it up and executed it. But sometimes I have a scenario inside my head and I try my absolute hardest to like think up any keywords that I could type in to trigger this storyline to appear. And there's a few that I just can't find anything like. And I'm like, is this a problem that everyone is having? Like, are you guys brewing up ideas for porn and then trying your hardest to find them and then being disappointed when you can't find it? Or am I a porn visionary? And should I be selling these ideas? I, like, specifically, my dream porn of the moment. And I've had this idea for several years. And it's Uber pool porn. First of all, I just feel like a lot of the storylines in porn, they don't hit at my particular desires, or they appear like they're about to, but then they give up on the good stuff. Like, for example, I love masseuse porn, but nobody ever nails masseuse porn. Like, I try to look up masseuse porn, and it's not doing what I want it to do. Because I think the appeal of, like, a porn storyline involving a massage is, like, I love storylines that are like, oh, who, me? And it's like, oh, my God, me? And it's like, oh, I'm just a little lady. I don't do things like that. But then, obviously, turns out she's a dirty bitch. Like, I love that. And I love, like, the sensuality and the gentleness. I have no interest in watching blowjobs or, like, any aggressiveness in porn. I watch porn for visuals of eating pussy and massaging bodies covered in oil. That's good to me. But I feel like masseuse porn is always like the other way around, where it's like the male client and the female masseuse. I don't really want that. I don't care about that. I want to be the client. I want to picture myself in that scenario. And I want you to be like treating me like I am literally a shard of glass, right? Like, you have to be so delicate with my body. If you are too intense, like, I will literally break. I will shatter into a million more pieces. That's what I want from that. I want someone, like, so delicate, like, looking at you like you're the world, covered in oil masseuse porn. That's the vision for that. But, okay, back to what I was talking about before, my big vision, which is Uber pool porn, which this idea was conjured up because of a real life experience that I had, where it was probably like 2017 or 2018, and I was in an Uber pool. I feel like this wasn't allowed, because this is the only time I've ever been in an Uber pool that was this packed. But it was a small car, two seats up front and then three in the back seat. But have you ever been in an Uber pool where it's like three in the back seat, you have a person in the middle seat in an Uber pool? No. Like, when you know the people, yes. But I think that was, like, the only time. Every seat was full. I somehow ended up in the middle of the back seat, and every person in the car was a man. And I remember sitting in the back seat of that car being like, I feel like I've seen this before. Being like, I feel like somebody wrote this. And obviously that storyline can go several different directions depending on who's the author. But if I was the author, it would be so sensual and sexy. and there's one guy in the corner that's just too shy. He doesn't do anything. He just watches. And everyone's just like obsessed with the woman in that dynamic. She does nothing to them. It's all about pleasing her. And I think it'd be great. I think it'd be a really good storyline. And I think about it often. And I always look up Uber pool porn to see if anybody's done that. Because it seems like it'd be good. Hi, guys. Welcome back to Emotionally Online, the show for spilling guts and sharing secrets, hosted by yours truly, the one and only Maddie Drosbeck. I just really had to get that off my chest today. So I'm glad that we got that out of the way. Just talking a little bit about masseuse porn and Uber pool porn and how maybe there is a hole that needs to be filled there. I didn't mean for that to sound like what it sounded like, but I guess it also is supposed to sound like that. There's a gap in the industry that needs to be filled. We need more Uber pool porn and masseuse porn that's focused on ladies. Woo! Today is episode 30. We made it to episode 30 of Emotionally Online. That feels like we're getting up there. It's like a real thing now. We've been doing this for a minute. 30 episodes of Emotionally Online. Speaking of other exciting things, we're almost done with my new round of merch. I'm so excited for you guys to see the designs that we've been working on. We've been working on this next drop since January. And I am so proud of what things are looking like. I got some of the samples in last week, and I've made some changes. So they're not completely done yet. But I think that after this next round of changes, we'll be completely done. And I just got to say, the designs are incredible. You guys are going to love them. I don't want to give away too much. I'll probably start wearing the pieces once I get them because I'm so excited. I'm not going to be able to contain myself. But it's taking a bit longer this time around because I wanted to do everything custom this time. So I have a very particular vision in mind when it comes to like the fit and feel of these items. And last time we went with blanks that already existed, and the options for blanks that already exist that have a wide size range are already kind of slim. There's not a lot of options. So when I come in and I'm like, oh, I want a particular feel and fit to these items, it just doesn't exist. Plus size options are notoriously not that great. So you sort of have to do it yourself, do it all custom if you want a very specific thing executed, which is definitely what I wanted to do this time around, taking learnings from the last batch of merch. So everything is being completely custom built, so the fit is going to be just right. I really wanted all of these items to be oversized without sizing up. I'll tell you, there's going to be a band t-shirt, an embroidered sweater, and a sweat set. And they're all Emotionally Online themed. Last time when we did the round of merch, it was, I did one shirt with my name on it. One was an Emotionally Online t-shirt, and one was a photo of me with some of my poetry. It was super zoomed in. You probably couldn't even tell, but it was a photo of my tits with some of my poetry around it. And of all of those, the Emotionally Online t-shirt was the best seller. So this time around, we definitely heavily leaned into Emotionally Online. All of the pieces will be Emotionally Online themed, and you guys are going to fucking love them. Honestly, they're so cute. And these ones are colorful. So last time we went more of a neutral route, beige, white, black, some reds, some pinks. This time we're going color, color, color. The band tee's more neutral with a splash of color, but the sweat set and the sweater are both very colorful. So I'm so excited. It's going to be so good. The quality of these items are amazing. And yeah, I'm just so excited to finally get to share these with you guys. So expect like an early summer launch. I don't have an exact date yet. Whenever we get things finalized, we'll know more about that. But very excited about that. Obviously, the prices for that will be a bit higher than the ones last time because these are custom made, but they'll be well worth it. And also, another little bit of news before I get into what I actually wanted to talk about today, which is, if you listened to the episode last week, towards the end of the episode, me, Ashley, and Mika really got into talking about our relationships with movement. And I was talking about how I've been in like a long search of a dance studio that is compatible with the energy that I want, and just a studio that really prioritizes joy in movement and isn't like super fucking intense for no reason. And I have a YouTube video coming out, a vlog of this experience, but literally a day after we filmed that podcast, I was sitting on the couch in Ashley's living room and just scrolling on Instagram and saw someone posted at this studio in Brooklyn called Good Move. And I was like, ooh, what's this? Like, let me check it out. Looked at their page. I swear to God, I could have thought this studio up in my brain. I felt like I manifested it into existence. The very next day, after talking on the podcast about how I wanted to find this dance studio, a dance studio that fit literally all of my wants fell into my lap. I immediately signed up for classes. At the time of recording, I've now gone 3 times. So in the span of a week, all of a sudden I'm like fully invested in this dance studio. I got a membership. So I'm like, what a huge update in just the span of a week. Could not have predicted that, but I'm like so excited to finally have an outlet for dance. And I talk a lot about it in the vlog that's going up, I believe, today when you're listening to this episode. Same day, I should have a vlog going live, probably a little later. The podcast usually comes out in the morning. So a little later today, there will be a vlog going up about my experience finding this dance studio and some reflections I've had about my journey with movement over the last week. But it was just crazy because I felt like it was all sparked by that conversation on the podcast. I really felt like I conjured this into existence, or really you did, whoever wrote that question. I feel like you were the reason that I found this dance studio. I don't know. And I've had such a positive, reflective week. I actually went to a class this morning and I just feel amazing. I feel so happy and so excited to sort of dive into it more and bring dance back into my life. So, happy updates. We've got visions for porn, a new merch line about to drop, and dance classes filling our fucking cup. I love it. Literally all good things. So if you're reading the title of this episode, you know that I want to talk about popularity today. I really don't know what the fuck I'm titling this episode, but I do know that I want to talk about popularity. It has been on my mind this week, just reflecting on like my experiences, my relationship to the idea of popularity growing up, and how that has changed as an adult, and what I don't know what spaces I am in as an adult where popularity is valued, and how that feels conflicting to me sometimes and like confusing, because I just have my reservations about those things. Anyways, I'm speaking vaguely, so let me just get into the specifics. But the reason why I wanted to talk about this week, / it's been on my mind a lot this week, is because Instagram recently introduced a verification that you can pay for. It's called like Meta Plus, Meta Premium. I don't fucking know. It's some premium thing that you can pay for, $15 a month for a blue check on Instagram. I don't know if there's many other benefits. I've heard whisperings that if you do buy the check, you get like a contact at Meta, which is obviously only beneficial if you're a creator, but worth noting. Twitter did this a few months ago when Elon Musk brought in the buying a blue check thing. Did they already get rid of that? I forget if that was gotten rid of or if it's still there, Twitter Blue. But they introduced buying a blue check. But on Twitter, you can tell if someone bought the blue check. When you like hover over their blue check, it says like, this person is verified because they are a paying subscriber of Twitter Blue. Versus on Instagram, there's really no way to tell who bought their check and who didn't unless they have their check before March 2023. Because you can click on someone's like check mark and their name and their profile, and it opens a page that tells you like when the account was created and some other information and when the account got verified. So if they got verified before March 2023, you can be certain that it is a like a real verification for the intended purpose of a verification versus they might have bought it past that date. It might be a real verification, it might not, but there's no way to actually know if someone bought their check mark or not on Instagram, I don't think, the way that there is on Twitter. Now, both of them just like completely bastardized the concept for verification in the first place to the point where it just feels like stupid to even have check marks, because if anyone can get one, then like what's the point? In my brain, and I think in most people's brains, having a blue check didn't necessarily mean that you were just like, you're cool, you're popular, lots of people like you, but rather that you are a public figure that could have people trying to pretend to be you and make fake accounts of you. So it's helpful to have the blue check so people can tell this is your real account. It's not like, everybody with any little bit of notoriety needs a blue check necessarily. I mean, granted, there are a lot of people with blue checks that are like, there's no way people are impersonating them. Anyways, I feel like at the heart of it, the reason for someone needing a blue check is because they are a public facing figure that people might try to impersonate. And so you need to have their main account slash they're being searched up a lot. Maybe there's a lot of fan accounts and they need to know what to show at the top of like the suggestions list in these algorithms when people are searching their accounts rather than seeing a bunch of fan accounts pop up instead of the actual person you're looking for. There's a reason for verification, right? And I feel like by letting people buy the check, first of all, you're just absolutely bastardizing the concept. Might as well get rid of it since it's completely worthless now and it's not gonna even be helpful if anyone can get a fucking check. Doesn't verify anything. But that's sort of besides the point. That's not even what I wanted to talk about today. That's just like the first reaction I have. But the second reaction I have, which is the one that I want to talk about, is that I feel so icky about the concept of paying for verification because I can see what kind of feelings or reactions are born from that. I mean, for starters, just focusing specifically on myself, I would never buy a blue check. I would never pay a subscription for a check mark. Because that just feels not in alignment with my values. It just feels icky to me. If I bought a blue check mark, I would literally want my friends to have an intervention with me to be like, what is it that you care about genuinely in this world? And is this in alignment with the person that you want to be and the things that you care about? Do you want to be someone that pays for a blue check mark? The answer is no. But I want to say more about that later because I don't look down on anybody that does buy a blue check mark, which I'll talk about the third reason, but focusing on the second reason. It makes me feel icky. I wouldn't personally do it because it doesn't feel like it aligns with my values, but it also stresses me out for like what this means for young creatives. I think that like social media in a lot of ways is like the comparison machine, and when you are not self-reflective and like regulating what you're consuming and setting boundaries with what you are taking in online, it can be a really dangerous just like place for you to compare yourself to other people, especially as a young creative person, whether you're someone who makes videos or a podcaster or a musician, an actor, whatever it is, a writer. I think that like social media is already a place of comparison, but now with the blue check, I just worry that young creative people are going to feel pressured to pay into this subscription service in order to be seen as like credible or to seem cool to for other people, for their peers to look at them and think that they're successful, that they're really doing something for themselves, they're being recognized, and that it just becomes like this like back and forth of like, well, now you feel like you have to pay fucking Mark Zuckerberg $15 a month for you to look cool and for your peers to see you as being like legit at what you do, when this is all just like playing to people's insecurities to get them to pay money every month. I just have an issue with it. The general concept of what it is, paying $15 for a blue check mark every month, paying $15 to fucking Mark Zuckerberg every month so that you can feel important or like the work you're doing is cool and people like it and you're feeling recognized. You're gonna pay for that recognition. It literally, I hate it so fucking much. I don't, like, I understand why they're making people pay for this, because of course people are going to buy this. But it hurts my head and my heart so much because I just don't, I don't like it. It feels like a very slippery slope to me. And I just worry about what valuing things like that does to a person's self-esteem. But, and let me get to my third reaction to all of this, which is that I also have a deep understanding for the creative people that do end up purchasing a blue check, because it has been said, I don't know exactly how true all of this is, but it does make sense that these algorithms are going to prioritize people with blue checks. So if you're a social media creator or a musician that's trying to get your music out there, or a writer who's trying to get their book out there, whatever it is, if you're someone who's trying to use the internet to reach people, all of a sudden now, in order for your account to be on the same playing field as everyone else's, you need to pay them a subscription fee to have your account prioritized in that way, which is again fucked, because I think that content and like platforms like Instagram and YouTube and Twitter and whatever, like the reason why social media is so amazing is because hypothetically anyone could gain traction on these apps. Anyone can make an account and make great content, and assuming that that great content eventually gets rewarded. But if we're entering a space where you need to pay in order for your content to even have a shot at getting rewarded, that's fucked. And like it adds another barrier to entry in terms of like using social media to your advantage, when the whole appeal of social media in the first place was that it was like, well, hypothetically anyone can make an account and do this. But if you're making people pay for blue check marks and you're prioritizing those accounts, then no, not everyone can. It's whoever's willing to shell out at least $15 a month for a blue check on one social media platform. And anyways, on top of that, I've heard whisperings that you get a contact at Meta if you buy the blue check mark, which as a creator can be helpful. I mean, for a lot of creators, I don't think they're going to need a contact at Meta, to be totally fucking honest with you. But, which is, again, ridiculous. You'd think that you wouldn't have to pay to get a contact, that if you were someone who is producing a lot of content for a certain social media site and you have over 10,000 followers, that you would be able to message the team directly and actually get a decent response and not an automated response. Like, it's so stupid and it just hurts my brain. But I do have an understanding for the creators that are going to pay for this, because it feels like a business move. It feels like, oh, you have to buy this now if you want your account to be prioritized, if you want a shot at actually doing well on the social media site. Which, if that's your job, of course you're going to pay it. Like, I'm not going to fault you for that. But also, I just don't, it doesn't sit right with me. It's so icky. I think, like, if I paid for a blue check mark, I'm not kidding when I say I would need my friends to, like, strap me to a chair and be like, who are you? What the fuck are you doing? Because that's just, it seems so unreal to me. But it's, like, it's hard not to see dynamics like that play out online without having flashbacks to being bullied as a kid and having to, like, fight for people to see you as cool and notable as a kid. Like, I don't want to compete for popularity as an adult. I don't want to. And I think in some ways you could argue that, like, doing social media at all is competing for popularity. And that's not an unfair assessment. To some degree it is. Obviously I care about growth and success in this career, but as it pertains to myself, not in comparison to other people. I want the stuff that I create to stand on its own. I don't want to buy a check mark in order to be recognized for the things that I do. Even if it's an algorithm that's recognizing me, like, I don't even want to buy into the idea that that's okay. You know what I mean? Like, even if I am fully not in control of this at all, and it's just like these social media sites are going to decide what we have to value in order to do this as a career, I actually cannot even get myself to be like, well, I'm going to put what I think and feel to the side to buy a check mark so that they will let me do this as a career. Like, I just can't deal with that. That's so stupid. I feel very similarly about, like, Raya, which is a dating app for anybody with a minor amount of clout. You can apply to get an invite to it. First of all, I would never apply to be on Raya because I understand what fat phobia in those spaces looks like. When you have a bunch of people that think they're fucking important and are like, I'm super hot and I make money and I have followers on the internet, and so I think I can do fuck all and speak to everybody however the fuck. Like, I have flashbacks to high school all the time, witnessing some people in this space and how they go about it, because it's really, people get the tiniest bit of clout and they start acting the same way that, like, the popular crowd did in high school, and they just, like, treat you like shit. So I'm like, I've never had any interest in any of that, in participating, knowing those people even in the slightest. I would never want to download an app like Raya because I just feel like it's a cesspool of that, and I understand what happens to people like me in that pool. Like, bitch, I went through high school. I understand how high school was. I'm not trying to do it again as an adult. And that seems like the same thing to me. Yeah, that's fucking stupid. Like, I can't get myself to care or think that any of this is cool in any way. It frustrates the fuck out of me, because I feel like, how is it that people are getting, like, the most minor amount of clout and you're like, you know what's important to me now? Being on this exclusive dating app, getting a verification check. Like, why the fuck is that important? It hurts my brain. Like, I don't know if this reaction that I'm having is just so deeply a product of being a person that was bullied as a kid and just feeling like a lot of these dynamics mimic high school and being like, why the fuck would anyone want to relive that? So I don't know, maybe it is just like a bullied child syndrome thing where anything that is remotely connected to competing for popularity, I feel like I want to run to the hills from. It feels just so reminiscent of high school and the things that people cared about back then. And I feel such a resistance to all of that. And, you know, I was reflecting in general this past week about being bullied as a kid, because I watched the podcast interview that Alex Cooper of Call Her Daddy did on, I believe, the show is called Diary of a CEO. It popped up in my recommended on YouTube, and I ended up watching it. I'm not a big Call Her Daddy listener. I definitely, at one point, listened to the show at least semi-regularly. Not because I agreed with Alex in any way, or her former co-host, but because I thought they were funny. I think, like, Call Her Daddy was always a little confusing to me because the advice that they gave on that show was actually so awful. So if you were listening to the show and assuming they were serious, it was like, what the fuck? But if you were listening to the show and assuming they were joking, it was kind of funny. And sometimes I couldn't tell if they were, like, being dead ass or if they were exaggerating for, like, dramatic effect and humor. Which, if it was the latter, it was funny. I think in general, it's funny to say crazy things that men get mad at. Especially when it comes to dating. It's just funny. But I'm definitely not a regular listener of Call Her Daddy now. But with that said, I always did like Alex in particular. I remember that she was the one that edited Call Her Daddy. I don't believe she edits it anymore. But for a while, it was like her that was really running the damn thing. And I think she still is very involved in everything that she does now. And I respect creators that have their hands in multiple buckets, that sort of have their hand in every aspect of what they do. Because I relate to that. And I like, hats off to those people. I think it's really cool. And I just feel like a certain kinship with people that are like that, because that's how my brain works as well. And I want to have my hand in every bucket and be like very me. It's all me. I want it to be all me. And so anyways, I just always had like a respect for her. And I think that what she's doing is cool. So every now and again, I'll watch Call Her Daddy if they have like a cool guest on. And yeah, so I saw Alex was on Diary of a CEO and it seemed like an interesting interview. So I ended up watching it, and Alex talks quite a bit in that interview about her experience being bullied as a kid. And you know what? I'm someone that likes to believe I can spot a bullied child from a mile away. Like, I just think there's something about kids that were bullied that I can like pick up on that I'm like, you were bullied as a kid, weren't you? And Alex never gave me bullied child energy. I can't explain the science behind that. I didn't get bullied kid energy from her. But in this interview where she was talking about being bullied and sort of like the reverberating effects that she's still dealing with now as an adult, I felt like she was speaking directly from the inside of my mind. Like, I could just so relate to what she was talking about. And I think I talk about it in therapy all the time. I don't know if I've really, really talked about it online, because sometimes it does feel wild to be like, I'm an adult and I'm still really impacted by the bullying I endured as a child. And I understand that it's like the things that happen in your childhood are like really formative and do end up being really important and all of that. But I think normally when people talk about like things in your childhood really shaping you or like childhood trauma that you're talking about in therapy, a lot of people are referring to like family dynamics. And I mean, in therapy, it comes up all the time, because I do feel like almost all of my insecurities and what I struggle with as an adult is connected to the fact that I was bullied as a teenager. And like, I had a very peaceful home life, all things considered. I think that my parents are very easy people. I felt like they were always very supportive and accepting of me. That's not to say that everything was perfect, right? Because I've definitely talked about how my body image issues, a lot of that stemmed from my immediate family members. But as an adult, I don't blame them for any of that. Not to get into it now, but I've came to peace with that a long time ago, and I don't blame them for it, because as an adult now, I can understand how sick people raise sick people. Sick people raise sick kids. So if your parent has an eating disorder and you're learning. My truth is that I'm always going to love a forbidden romance trope, and you guys know I love a spicy read. But what if the forbidden romance was also a cowboy romance? A hot, steamy, former pro bull rider with an employee that's slowly falling in love with him. If you're a fan of contemporary cowboy romances by authors like Bailey Hanna, Lila Sage, Elsie Silver, or Paisley Hope, you will absolutely love Taming of the Heart by Elliot Rose, which is a part of the Crimson Ridge series. Each book in the series reads as a standalone, but they all take place in the same remote small town, and they're all, of course, very spicy. Taming of the Heart is super spicy. It has very explicit sexual imagery and language throughout, which obviously is exactly what I signed up for. And it basically just drops you right into what it would be like to be hired by a ranch for the summer, except your boss is unreasonably hot. Literally looks like every fantasy and daydream you've ever had come to life. Oh, and he's already accidentally seen your favorite toy. Okay. You're the eldest daughter. You lock your heart away safely out of sight. But then boom, a former pro bull rider, much older than you, with a mustache, might I add, that makes you weak at the knees, shows up. He's the whole package. And he's luring you in with glimpses of what it might be like to let your guard down for the first time in your entire life. I know you guys are going to love it. I've been sucked in from the moment I picked it up. You can find Taming of the Heart by Elliot Rose wherever books are sold, in print and in ebook. And you can learn more by checking out Kensington Publishing at kensingtonbooks.com. About all of that from them, odds are you're gonna grow up with an eating disorder too. And so I don't blame them for that. Not that I'm getting into this now, but that's something I came to peace with a long time ago. And but other than that, like my parents were always super supportive and accepting of me. They supported any weird thing that I wanted to do. They were always fans of my YouTube videos. I felt like I could be myself at home. Like there was no part of me that couldn't just come as I am, which if you know my parents, you understand that on a deep level. Like I think a lot of times, like at the very least, even if your parents are like super supportive and kind, you can't like totally be yourself around them because they don't want you to like, I don't know. There are a lot of parents out there that are like, you can't even curse, let alone like talk to us about sex or other adult topics. My house was just never like that. We can really talk about anything. Sometimes I wonder if we shouldn't talk about everything, but I think it was always for the best that like it was an open book in my house. There was no, I don't know, like no random bullshit like that where it's like the adults are allowed to talk about this, but you as a child are not. There was none of that in my house. We were all just like allowed to be ourselves and to talk, and we wouldn't get in trouble for asking questions or saying a curse word or whatever, anything like that. And anyways, I'm like talking about things that are not related to what I'm getting at here, but I had a very peaceful, like positive, safe home life with parents that really cared about me and my siblings. I'm close with all of my siblings. Like I had a great home life. School is where my trauma is. My experience at school, my experience with other kids, that was the hard part for me growing up. Going home was the relief. Going to school was the stressful part. And ultimately, that's why I ended up making a YouTube channel, because I couldn't post my videos on Facebook or the other social media sites where my peers could see them because they would bully me for them. Before I started posting on YouTube, I would post my videos on Facebook and I would get clowned on. And the amount of stories that I've had to recount in therapy, moments that I was bullied when I was 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17... Sometimes I'm telling these stories to my therapist and there's part of me that feels like some kind of shame or shock that I am still impacted by it. Like there's some part of me that feels angry for being like, how are you 26 years old and you even still remember that? How is it that you are 26 years old and you are unpacking these things and acknowledging that they still like are bothering you in some way? That it's connected to the things that you struggle with now. Like for some reason, because it's like school bullying, it's been hard for me to like acknowledge it as something that is acceptable to still be struggling with. I just don't know that I hear it from people that much, like talking about how bullying impacts adults. And seeing Alex like tear up on this podcast, Alex Cooper, like one of the most well-known, successful female podcast hosts, like seeing her getting teary about being bullied as a kid and how it still affects her now as an adult, I just felt like very seen in that moment, because I still cry about that stuff all the time, or not necessarily about that stuff, but I cry about other things and it turns out it's connected to those things, you know, or like a lot of the things I feel now, it can tie back to the things I felt when I was a teenager. And, you know, I think back to a lot of the bullying stuff that I went through, and like understanding now how deeply hurtful and impactful those moments were, I at times feel so frustrated that adults didn't do more to stop it. Because I think when you're younger and you're being bullied, especially when you're a girl being bullied, people tell you to toughen up all the time, where they're just like, oh, that's just how boys are. Especially if you were a girl that was bullied by boys. I was not bullied by girls. I was bullied by boys. Why do you think I have so many issues with men? Don't get me started. It's all connected. But when you're a young girl being bullied by boys, the amount of people that are like, oh, that's just how boys are. Boys will be boys. Like, there's nothing we can do. And you tell administration, you tell parents, you tell the parents of the kids that are fucking bullying you, and they don't do anything. They find it's acceptable or normal. It's just like part of life, which I will never understand. And you know what? Sometimes I have moments where I'm like, it's a shame that you don't want kids. Because I would be a great fucking mom. If I found out that my kid was bullying someone, I cannot even emphasize you. I cannot even tell you the lengths I would go to correct that behavior. That would make me so sad. I would be like, it would be my top fucking priority to make sure my kid understood the weight of their actions and their words and how to speak to other people, how to treat other people, how to see other people. Because even if you don't say it and you're thinking all those nasty, evil thoughts, I've got a problem with that too, bucko. I just, like, the fact that there are parents out there that can hear their kid is such an awful, relentless bully, and they're like, what do you want me to do? Like, I wasn't privy to this as a kid, but my mom tells me this story a bit. But I was being bullied by one of my friends at the time when I was younger. I was probably in like third or fourth grade. And I would tell my mom that they were bullying me all the time. And my mom eventually called the mom of the person that was bullying me. And they would always bully me for my body, my weight, and they would call me fat and just like all these other names, you know, just anything you want, really. And my mom called this other mom up and basically said, like, I don't want your daughter talking to my daughter like that. I don't want Maddie to see herself as any less. And this mom basically said to my mom, oh, it doesn't matter, she already does. I was like 9. I was like 8 or 9 years old. And this grown like 40-year-old mom is out there being like, oh, I don't give a fuck that my daughter is bullying your daughter. Maddie already thinks she's less. And I just can't imagine being someone like that who is so like do-do-do about bullying. And I think administration a lot of time is do-do-do about bullying when it comes to boys. I think that in middle school particularly, like, people love to crack down on mean girls and like really crack down on girls are bullies and they're mean girls and they're so awful. And I felt like there was a real crackdown. We used to have assemblies about mean girls. They would like get us into the assembly room. They would bring all the girls down to the assembly room and give us these big presentations on bullying. And I remember sitting in those presentations being like, why the fuck are the boys not here? Because I don't have issues with any of you bitches. And I felt like it was always so emphasized, like, mean girls, we got to stop girls from being mean. And the boys that were mean, it was just like, oh, that's a boy thing. That's just like how boys are. They're flirting with you. It's because they like you. And it was like, it was just a circle, right? Because if you're never going to reprimand the young boys for bullying the young girls, then like, what? What happens to the little girls that get bullied by boys? Nothing. They just stand there telling everyone that they're being bullied because they feel comfortable to tell people. They feel comfortable to reach out to adults. But the adults don't do anything. Or one adult does something, but the other adults don't care. The parent of the kid, the administration, whatever. I look back on so many of those moments and I'm just like, why didn't they take it more seriously? Why didn't people try harder to correct that behavior? Because it's not something lighthearted. Oh, it's just bullying. It's just bullying. Like, it really does stick with people. And those are formative years. That's how you learn about yourself. And being relentlessly bullied by people does change a person. And sometimes I feel like grateful, not, I don't know, grateful is not the right word, but sometimes I'll be like, I don't know that I would be doing this if it wasn't for that. Because it really was like, I did YouTube because I was bullied. I could not share my videos with my classmates. I could not post it on Facebook. So I made a YouTube. I liked doing this thing. This thing got me bullied. So I went online to find people that liked it too. And so there's part of me that's like, oh, I'm grateful for it in the sense that like things worked out the way they were meant to. And I think that being bullied gave me a sense of humor and a good personality. But on the other hand of things, I want to believe that I would have been this person regardless and that I would have been cool and I would have found myself here eventually if I wasn't bullied. And maybe I could just be the same person I am now minus the issues I have as a result of being bullied as a child. I don't know. But to be honest, people were bullying me even after we graduated high school. Actually, some of you guys might have even seen this happen. I'll tell this story and then I'll start to wrap things up here because I've been talking for a while. But when I was a freshman in college, it was actually after my freshman year of college, it was summer after, I posted some photos on Twitter of me in a bathing suit at the beach. This was when I was in my body positivity era. I had just bought a bikini for the first time the year before. I loved taking photos of myself in those bikinis at the beach. I was constantly posting body positivity content because it was like for the first time in my life, I actually fucking liked myself. And I felt comfortable with my curves and my fatness. And I just felt genuinely content and comfortable in myself for the first time in my life. And that was something that started in high school, towards the end of high school. I bought my first bikini February of my senior year of high school. And but I didn't enter my like true confidence era until I was in college. And so it was summer after my freshman year, and I had taken some photos of myself on the beach and posted them on Twitter with some caption about like being beautiful at any size, loving your body, wearing a bikini at any size, something like that, just something cutesy and with my photos and just being excited that I felt comfortable to post things like that because my whole life I saw other kids post things like that and, you know, wear bikinis to pool parties, go to pool parties, and I just didn't get to have any of that as a kid. So I was excited to have my little bikini moment. So anyways, posted those photos. And may I remind you, before I get into this, this was a year after graduating. And posted the photos on Twitter, went about my life. I went to Chipotle. I was driving my sister and her best friend to Chipotle. And the three of us were going to pick it up and go back to my house and eat it and hang out. And I remember exactly where I was. I was sitting at a stoplight and my phone is like blowing up and I'm driving. I tell my sister, like, can you just check this? Like, what are my friends trying to say to me? All my friends are texting me being like, are you on Twitter? Did you see that? Did you see that? And I was like, just open it. Like, go on Twitter and see what they're talking about. And one of the boys that I graduated with had written like a wall of text in a notes in the notes app, screenshotted it, and tweeted it back to me in response to the photos that I posted. And it was a wall of text telling me to lose weight. And like, he linked the Wikipedia page to weight loss or something. It was something like that. And it was just like a wall of text about how I'm not healthy and I need to get help and I need to lose weight and it's not attractive and whatever else. All these horrible things that you can imagine were said in that wall of text. And this is what I put up with my whole life as a kid, where it was like constant, constant bullying for my body. And I felt like so mad because I felt like everything was stacked against me with my body. I don't want to cry. But it often felt like there was like no chance that I would ever feel better about myself because I was the only one that wanted that. It felt like no one around me wanted me to like myself. And like adults wanted me to lose weight. It was like everyone had a problem with my body. And because everyone else had a problem with it, I had a problem with it too. And it really like pains me. I feel a lot of like just hurt for my child self looking back on a lot of this because like I was a kid. And it's hard to look back on old photos, like understanding how badly I was being bullied at the time, because I'm like looking at a child's body when I look at those photos. And so it's like really painful for me to, oh my God, I didn't think I was gonna cry today. But it's painful to look back on those photos of like your 13-year-old self, knowing that you were being like relentlessly bullied for your weight at the time. And then like now understanding that like that was a baby, that was a kid. She was a size 6 and she was being bullied. And, oh my God. Yeah, it's just painful because that was a kid. That was a child. That is a child's body. And it hurts me that anyone ever thought it was appropriate to say mean things to her. And that like even adults wouldn't step in because everyone thought that it was like, you know, people believe that if you say enough mean things to fat kids that they'll lose weight. And adults don't care that they're being fat phobic or that other people are being fat phobic because they're just like, someone needs to tell her. Whatever the fuck else people would say. And it just like, it breaks my heart that nobody ever stood up for me besides me. And I often like, I look back on a lot of those things and I don't understand how I ended up liking myself. And I really do think like, and this is so corny, but I really do thank people like Lady Gaga for why I ended up liking myself. I know I'm so stupid. I'm crying about Lady Gaga now. But that was all I had. You know, I didn't have anybody that was encouraging me to love myself or stand up for myself or telling me that I was good enough. That was it. It was her. And like people on the internet, when I was consuming my first content, the first content that I'd ever watched from body positivity and fat liberationists, like I can't tell you how impactful that was for me. And I those people are the only reason why I like myself. Because it really did, when I was growing up, it felt like everyone wanted me to not like myself. And I was the only one in my corner. And I really do. I look back at those people on the internet, Lady Gaga, as being the reason why I had the courage to get angry when people were mean to me, instead of just believing that what they said was true, or that I had to feel about myself the way that they wanted me to feel about myself. And so, anyways, even a year after graduating, people are writing me walls of text about how I'm so fat and awful, I need to lose weight. He didn't even follow me on Twitter. Nobody followed me on Twitter from my school, okay? So somebody's sending around my photos. I'm being bullied in group chats. I don't care. Somebody drafts up this wall of text to post out. They post it. And, you know, my 19-year-old self, she was a lot of things, but I liked her in this moment. When I got home and I read that on Twitter, I went and put on a bikini and took photos of myself eating my Chipotle bowl in my bikini and like tweeted them back being like, basically I was like, you're mad. I said something about how like, you're not going to tell me what I can or can't wear or what my body needs to look like. You don't know me. You know nothing about me. You know nothing about my health. And if you did know anything about me and about my health, you'd know that I only recently overcame an eating disorder, and I've had a tumultuous relationship with my body my entire life. And I'm so grateful to be in a space now where I can wear a bikini and feel confident and feel happy. And like, you're not going to take that away from me. And the tweet sort of blew up. It had like a couple, it had thousands of interactions on it. Went way beyond my school. And his tweet with 100 likes or whoever else, because that's the thing back then, people would go in on me on Twitter, and then like half the school would like the tweets about me. And then I would come in and I'd tweet my responses, and my followers would be like, yeah, yeah, yeah. So those of you that have been around for a while might even remember that, which is crazy. That's also the crazy part of this, is that like, if you have followed me for a long time and watched my videos when I was in high school, like, you probably watched me get bullied. Because a lot of it was happening on the internet. People would get like so mad at me for having opinions, for being fat on the internet. And you know what? Sometimes it's hard for me to even like refer to myself as fat in high school, because I was a kid. I had a child's body. I was like a size 10, 12 in high school. That's not even plus size. She was a baby. She was a child. She was a kid. You evil people made her feel bad about herself. Oh my God. You will get your comeuppance for that. You will get your fucking comeuppance for that. You will get, karma will come back around for you. Don't fucking worry, okay? We will get justice for middle school Maddie. Don't you fucking worry about it. So anyways, had no idea I was gonna cry today. I surprise myself, me and my tear ducts surprise myself every single fucking episode. So anyways, I think this whole buying verification thing just made me reflect a little bit on competing for popularity and how awful I think that is, and how I think that generally popularity in its broad form is a kind of like evil, and I feel very icky about participating in it in any way. But also at the same time, I do have like understanding for the creative people that are going to want to buy a verification tick, because if they don't, their account might get suppressed. It's just fucked. Like, people are being like sort of cornered into participating in the same dynamics they had to participate in as teens. Anywho's, that's been on the noggin this week. Also, I just want to emphasize here, this is literally no shade to anyone that is or does or has purchased a blue check. I understand a lot of people have no reason to think about this as deeply as I do. Clearly, I have drama. So it is totally fine to have a different perspective on this than I do. I do not judge you for that. I want to make that clear. So anyways, I hope that you all have a beautiful, wonderful day, beautiful, wonderful Friday. I hope you spend time with people you love, that you say a few nice things to yourself in the mirror, and that you come back and hang out with me again next week. I love you guys so much. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you next week.